I was standing in my balcony, overlooking the vast expanse of the green trees, standing tall and happy at their best form in the spring, under the shadows of which a group of young boys around the age of 9 were playing. These are boys whom I usually spot walking around with their arms wrapped around their comrade's shoulders, some days riding bikes together. They remind me of the younger days of euphoric friendships. As I was watching them play that day, they were playing badminton. I understood that they had divided themselves into two teams. Just as I was beginning to awe them and wish I was younger all over again, I started hearing these boys hurling abuses at one another at their opposite teams. It began with their exchanging snide remarks about their playing styles. Interesting to me how "you play like a girl" is a comment which can fume a man even 9 years old. And soon these remarks transcended into personal, disconcerting remarks such as comments about their physical appearance, their parents' incomes, and so on. I could see a big, loud boy screaming at the top of his lungs at a shorter, quieter boy who was almost at the verge of crying. Horrified and hurt, I went inside my house from the balcony, thanking all gods for I being an adult now, with people in my circle being sensitive adults and not as insensitive as these fighting little boys. And as I entered my living room, the TV disseminated the news about the Russia-Ukraine war into the air, which pierced into my ears like bullet shots. The timing couldn't be more ironic. And there, it dawned upon me that there is a similarity between these two stories I was sandwiched between: the boys and the war. Do you see it? I am Akhila Rangan, a professional psychotherapist, and this is our podcast, where I become your chariot in your journey towards being whole. We all have been watching and hearing the gory details of the ongoing Russia-Ukraine crisis. Ever wondered what is the psychology of a war? We will be addressing this in parts in this and the upcoming episodes. In today's episode, we will be understanding the foundation of what causes conflicts leading to wars. And you will be surprised to see how you, yes, you, may as well be at the giving as well as receiving end of such behaviors on a daily basis, perhaps in diluted forms. Because let's remind ourselves first, wars are waged, fought, suffered, and died in by people like you and me. What is similar between the fighting boys and fighting countries is groups. Groups which divide people into in-groups and out-groups. Let's look at four scenarios to understand this better. You may have noticed yourself making groups, whether it is to play a game of cards, to divide house chores with your partner, in friendships, while handling a project at work, to broader groups like that of caste, religion, social class, politics, state, nation, and so on. Groups are ubiquitous. Let's take a moment and reflect on how many groups can we recollect that we are currently a part of. How many groups could you recollect? I could count up till 10. So, where do these groups come from? We as human beings have an innate need to belong and for identity. So we naturally may self-categorize ourselves with a certain identity. Example, male, tall, Indian, Sikh, and so on. Then we tend to look out for people with similar identities and form a social group. This sense of identity and belongingness is very gratifying to our self-esteem. Hence, self-categorization and identification become the first two steps in the process of gaining social identity. Scenario B. Have you ever noticed yourself feeling a certain sense of positive regard and inclination towards your own group and the people in it? Any group that you may have been a part of, even though the members were strangers to you. Let's take 5 seconds to reflect of a situation when we may have. I could recollect South Indians calling their people simple and humble, Punjabis calling their crowd joyful and full of life, Bengalis calling themselves intelligent and critical people, and so on. This is called an in-group bias. Psychologically, we become biased towards viewing our group in positive light, which may even lead to us overlooking their negatives, leading to a distorted sense of reality. Because, hey, this elevates our self-esteem, which is bound to our group membership. Scenario C. Have you noticed that you see someone who differs from your identity and you feel a sense of exclusion from them? For instance, imagine a Sikh man who goes to Bangalore for work and finds the workplace to be largely composed of South Indians. He is likely to feel alienated. And the differences between his identity and that of the South Indians may look all the more exacerbated now. This happens as a result of social comparison. Once we have categorized ourselves as a part of a group and have identified with that group, we tend to compare our group with others, leading to the formation of in-groups and out-groups. Scenario D. Can you recollect that time when you were looking at someone from an out-group and you felt an irresistible urge to find a flaw in them? and then to quickly generalize the entire group with that infamy? South Indians only eat rice. All Punjabis are loud. All Delhiites are rude. Are some that I have heard of. This tendency to look down upon and generalize our outgroups is called outgroup homogeneity. This is done perhaps subconsciously to feel better about our own group with which our self-esteem is bound. While these are comparatively lighter examples, outgroup homogeneity can take cruel shades of prejudice and discrimination as well. In the need to uphold our self-esteem, we may resort to glorifying our group at the cost of decrying and harassing the outgroup. An otherwise kind and calm individual may be seen resorting to fundamentalist and extreme measures of hatred and cruelty towards the outgroup when it comes to protecting the sanctity of their own group. This is called moral exclusion. All seems to be fair in war, they convince themselves. These four scenarios combined lead to group conflict, which we have witnessed in history in the form of the most brutal and gruesome wars and conflicts where humans show no evidence of empathy and compassion. Be it between Hindus and Muslims in India, Jews and Arabs in Israel-Palestine, Jews and Nazis in Germany or Russia and Ukraine today. Let's reflect. If at any point in our lives we may have looked at an outgroup with prejudice and may have exercised any kind of discrimination towards them, it could be as little and innocent as the little boys, how they became aggressive towards each other, beholding their team's identity. This prejudice may have been based on gender, age, geography, race, religion, sexuality, social class, occupation, marital status, anything. Now that you may have reflected and perhaps even found some of your most unintentional and unconscious thoughts and behaviors reeking of prejudice and discrimination, we may be able to understand how deeply ingrained and instinctive such tendencies are. So, can we do anything about them? Pause. Yes, pause. Because reacting impulsively, driven by our primitive instincts, is only half of being human. The ability to pause and respond wisely with empathy and compassion is what enables us to function in our full potential, to be whole. And this way, one small step at a time, perhaps in a distant future, we may be able to restore peace and humanity again in this world, which is currently at war. The same evening later, I saw those fighting boys petting a bunch of furry little puppies together, They looked really happy, with no trace of enmity or malice towards one another. My heart was full, oh so full. Perhaps it is easier at that age to let go and love. To be continued. This is Bye from Akhila, your chariot in your journey towards being whole. See you next week.